Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, here today as your host for Startup Hustle, covering all things e-commerce, Amazon, entrepreneurship. Today, we're specifically talking about expanding your e-commerce business. It's going to be a great episode. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is supported by Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat discussing tech topics big, small, and strange. Compiler unravels industry topics, trends, and the things you've always wanted to know about tech through interviews with the people who know it best. Learn more about Compiler at redhat.com or clicking the link in our show notes. I honestly don't always get a chance to check out everything, including our sponsors, but I have actually listened to every episode of the Compiler podcast that they've released so far. It's cool. It's a cool format. It's full of great information. There's absolute experts on the call. Honestly, I'm like, how do they not let these people talk the entire time? That's how great some of the the content is on the podcast. I encourage you to check it out, Compiler by Red Hat. Thanks again to them for putting on our episode and getting more eyeballs and ears listening. I think it's going to be an awesome episode. Without further ado, this is a new friend of mine, a colleague. We don't consider each other competitors, but we're in the same game with the same passions. And I'm excited to bring him to the table. So from global e-commerce experts, Andy Hooper, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andrew, thank you very much for having me on. I'm excited to be on. So thanks for having us.
Yay. Well, I'm glad you're here. I know you you left the house, come back to the office to make sure we could get quiet for this podcast. You're across the pond, so to speak, in Europe. So a few hours ahead of us. I really appreciate you taking the time to, share some value with any of our listeners today.
No problem. No, I'm excited to do that. It's one of those sort of things that people often ask about, and then they sort of start talking about it. And the more you ask questions about what we do, sort of the deeper the knowledge gets, and people start going, "Whoa, there's a lot of information there." So it's great to get on this sort of thing to sort of really dispel some of the myths and talk to legends like yourself about your experiences as well, because that's hugely valuable for everyone listening.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun today because, one, we're both named Andrew. I used to go by Andy when I was younger. I'm Drew now. Just kind of like reinvented myself in my 20s. But, we're both Andys. We both love e-commerce. We both love Amazon. We're both in this game. I think that's fun. And something new for me, maybe the podcast has brought some of it, but also just, the growth, whether it's internationally or just the growth around e-commerce and Amazon has really created more networking events. The last year or so, just meeting other colleagues, other agency owners has been super enlightening for me. Not because of competition, because there's so many brands that need what we do and so many places to go with it, but more so just what are the other experts doing? What are some people doing that I don't know about? You don't know what you don't know. And kind of that thought process of iron sharpens iron. So I'm excited to get into it. I love starting the beginning of the show, getting to know a little bit about you instead of just getting into the title and everything that our businesses do. But For our listeners, you know, this is a podcast by founders for founders. Okay. So that's the kind of context that we try to approach the show. Let's talk a little bit about Andy. Like, how did you get your start? Were you always an entrepreneur, like from a child, or is it something you kind of like came across on accident? You know, how'd you get involved?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting one. I think when I was a nipper, a kid, I definitely had that ability to be able to think, I remember being at school and my mum would go to the local cash and carry and buy a load of bits, and then I'd take them to school and sell them. And I would sort of flip stuff. I'd do garage sales or car boot sales or whatever it happened to be. I was always sort of trying to make cash. I did a news round. I did a second newspaper round. I did a second newspaper round. I was always looking at ways to bring in extra cash. And from probably about 10 or 11, I was finding ways of earning snippets here and there. So I guess I've always had that in me, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Then, here in the UK, it's go get a 9-to-5, go get a job. You're not successful unless you've got a job. And, like most entrepreneurs, or business owners, I was told, you'll never get anywhere. I was sort of the joker in class. I did okay at school. I didn't really excel. I liked working. I didn't really like education.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left school, I went and did various bits and bobs. I worked in retail. I worked in a warehouse in the retail world in a large department store here, got into sales. And then I followed my passion. And everyone should follow their passion. Mm. So at that point, I then went and taught sailing around the world.
Okay.
So I'm a sailor. I've been a sailor all my life. And I went and taught sailing and windsurfing in most parts of the world.
Like like you were the skipper of a yacht, or like help me understand sailing?
A little bit smaller than that. So little dinghies. So okay. Small dinghies and windsurf boards. My job was to bring people on holiday, teach them to sail, teach them to windsurf, and get them learning how to do it and into an advanced level.
Were you in the UK at this time?
Well, most of it wasn't in the UK. Okay. I did a lot in Europe, a bit in the Middle East, a bit in India, sort of all the way around the world, Egypt, a bit in Africa.
I knew I liked you.
Do you know what? It gave me some really amazing coaching skills. The ability to coach people and develop
all different
people.
Types of people.
Exactly that. Then I thought, well, I better come back and get a job. And I better, I can't really do season after season after season. And in fact, in my last season, I was running a windsurf and kitesurf school in Egypt. And we had a target to sell additional things. And I went and got board shorts made. There was a local person coming back to that. None of the money was mine, like the centers. But I went and got all these board shorts designed, and we sold them to the punters. It was amazing. So that was great. So I think I still had that there. Then I got back, got a job, and basically my job was to get more people into sailing. I was working for the governing body of sailing here in the UK. British Sailing is renowned for being the best sailing nation in the world. Just like to get that in there. But on top of that, the job was about getting more people into the sport. And over that period, I did that role for 9 years. But over that period, that's when that fire started to come back.
You can convince people to get into sailing, you can maybe convince them to get into anything. Or at least like you're like, that's what I actually like. I like sailing, but I also just like what I learned while I was convincing people to like sailing.
Yeah, it was. Well, I absolutely 100% loved my job. Like if it was just about the job, I would never have left. But, I got married, I had kids, I needed some extra cash. I'm like, how do I make extra cash? I need to buy a house. I need to start developing this a bit further. So what do I need to do? Excuse me.
I want to pause right there. I'm going to let you catch your breath.
Yeah.
There's something you said, like kind of in your storyline. And I like to point out the similarities between founders and entrepreneurs. Like, we have different paths and you feel so alone as a kid, I think, against society or whatever. But honestly, a lot of entrepreneurs and founders have the same exact story in line. For me, sailing was being in a band and touring and playing music, writing my own music, playing cover shows for 4 hours at a bar of my favorite 90s to make money, to pay for my tour and things like that. And I loved what I did. I met a girl and wanted to be able to take care of them and financially being in a band was fine for me, but it wasn't fine for anything more. Right. Yep. And so, you know, you can see the similarities between them. And one other thing I would say for anyone like, you know, a younger person maybe tuning into the show, I lived in Africa, grew up in Africa, moved to the US at 16. I didn't do well in the school system for a number of reasons, because I like to work. And because yep. studying didn't make sense to me if they're just going to teach me out of a textbook. Like if the teacher actually had experience, I feel like I paid attention and I could listen to stories, but I'm a hands-on learner. And so, you know, I always thought I was a bad student until I started studying what I actually was passionate about.
Yeah,
you know, and that's when I found e-commerce and went all in, because I was like, actually, I'm an amazing student if I'm inspired by what I'm studying. It's just finding the right thing. Okay, so catch your breath.
Yeah, so
back to it.
Yeah, so at that point, I started thinking, what can I do to earn extra money? So I started flipping stuff on eBay. We were doing car boot sales. It's a bit like a garage sale, you know. I started selling stuff on Amazon. I started looking at...
So arbitrage, buying from garage sales and selling it on Amazon, or where were you sourcing?
No, I was sourcing. I started with silicone watches. You could buy it. There was this big fad, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago, silicone watches. You could buy them from China, very, very cheap. They come over and they release, they literally just fit on your arm. So started doing that. We looked after people's dogs when they went on holiday and earned cash that way. Basically anything I could do to earn some cash, you know, some additional cash. Then it was my cousin's wedding, and my dad was photographing my cousin's wedding, and I was like, I like taking photos, I'll help you. So that I then I took some nice photos. A friend said, hey, I saw those, could you photograph my wedding? I was like, yeah, sure. And then I was like, I can make some extra cash from this too. So I then did wedding photography. The wedding photography then gave me an excellent income, and I built that up as my second income. That gave me enough money for a deposit on a house. And it also, after that, then gave me enough money saved up to be able to set up, to leave work and set up a business. And I then set up a 3D printing scanning business. So
I love it.
3D scan you. And on that 3D scan, I would then print you. So when you get married, imagine getting married, you have your photos, and then you get an ornament of you on your wedding day as well. I mean, I'm
picturing like a cake topper, but yeah, maybe not.
And we did hundreds of cake toppers.
Okay.
And off the back of that, I also set up a sports consultancy where we support and help people coming back to my sports roots. But the reality of all of those is they weren't scalable. Yeah. And, you know, the market, although was great, wasn't really where I had visions. You know, yes, I could earn really good money on my own, but it wasn't something necessarily I was going to be able to bring mass people in. Mm. It wasn't something that was going to be able to perhaps give me a good exit at some point. So I was looking for something that I could scale and grow. And that's when I start, you know, 3D printing is a massive market now. You know, there's lots going on in that 3D printing, but it's not mass market. It's still very, very niche. And I'm like, well, that's great, but it's not there. It's not going to be there for another 10 years. So what else do I need? Then I was like, well, hold on. I was flipping stuff on eBay and Amazon, and I was doing that. Let's start doing a bit of that again. So I started doing that. And then I started working with somebody else and doing some consultancy for them. And this sort of idea came that, well, actually, this e-commerce thing, how can we expand sellers from the States typically to Europe? They were an accountant. I had this idea. We started moving these ideas around. And before you know it, this global e-commerce experts idea sort of came out of the ground. And that's
What year was this?
So this was 2016.
Okay. I love it. I just like a little bit of timeline. As someone that's been in space a long time, I'm like, okay, what was happening at that time? You know, like what was the craze? What was the boom? What were the features available? I got involved in e-commerce 2012. Okay, so a startup like car parts online, eBay, like, you know, it's not kind of the same time. It was really like 2015, I feel like, which was like the glory years of Amazon when they released advertising, and it was, you know, so cheap. And can remember even at that time, like expanding a brand to Europe, it was like the global EU at the time, like, which in my mind was crazy. Like I'm taking a brand international. What do I even know that I'm doing? And something that comes to mind that I can't help but point out here, I just like pointing these things out, is like, you know, when I was in a band for 4.5 years touring, I was creating album covers, writing music, booking shows, booking tours, coordinating with other bands, communicating at the show. I'm selling, we have to perform in order to be able to come back. There are so many aspects, you know, then I'm a bartender, then I'm a security guard, then I'm a landscaper, then I'm a warehouse worker. I'm a worker. Like I've always said, I'm a blue collar guy in a white collar world.
Exactly. You know? And all of those things, those skills you learn, whether it be, you know, one bit or another, you've probably learned Photoshop, website design, you know, video skills, audio, like everything. You've gone, how do I do that? I can't afford to do that. Hold on a second. Let's go to YouTube, right? Everything is on YouTube. Everything you need to learn is there. So you start, as you say there earlier, you start educating yourself, and that's when you fall back in love with, like the photography thing for me was the bit where I was like, well, I want to be a wedding photographer. Okay, how do I do that? What do I need to learn? Right, camera. That's easy. I go out and take hundreds of photos, learn what's rubbish, start, you know, and tweak them. Go back to YouTube. Oh, how do you do this? It's all there. And all of a sudden you start educating yourself and you realize that education piece isn't about maths, English, and science and history and geography. All the stuff that, you know, unless you're into it, is pretty dull. Like, to me, history, I don't know about, if many people here, you, entrepreneurs, founders, business owners, what's happened in the past is in the past. There's no relevance whatsoever other than history does repeat itself, but, like, that's all you need to know. Like,
yeah.
History, it's gone. What do I need to know? I'm too busy going, what's going on over there? Let's go. And I think a lot of people feel at school like that, and they don't fall into the, you know, teachers that are then like, well, you'll make nothing of yourself because you can't educate yourself and you can't
follow.
Learn.
You can't follow. You know,
exactly.
Not all of us are followers.
No.
Right? Yeah. I can follow in certain aspects, but in others I need to lead. Like, you know, it just depends. Like for me, I was working under leaders that didn't have my vision. Like I was passionate about e-commerce. They needed to go to a conference that didn't exist yet in order to be told that e-commerce was the thing or Amazon was the thing. Then they'd come back from the conference and be like, oh, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I know, I've been passionate about this for three years. Now I'm behind the curve. I'm trying to be the best in space, best in industry. And I can't even get, you know, my bosses to pay attention to what I'm trying to say because I had no platform to speak from, right? It was just a passion. And it was just like, I know that this is a big deal. And I had to just go. Like, it wasn't like, oh, well, this is how we've done business in the past, right? Yeah. So like, you know, I don't know about you, but the brands and manufacturers we talk, well, this is what we've always done. This is, you know, this is the way that we do it. The whole say, well, what about Sally in accounting? And what about, you know, Bill in sales? He's going to be upset if we start selling on Amazon because he's selling to 10 resellers that are all selling on Amazon. You know, the conversation goes, well, maybe there's a new way of doing it, you know? Yeah. Let me talk about a new way of doing it.
Well, interesting, know? What you said there about following, people will follow when they're inspired. There's a real difference, and it doesn't matter where you are in your journey, you know, whether you're still at school listening to this, right? You'll be inspired and follow the teachers that are engaging, that inspire you. I can remember my physics teacher. He inspired me not because I like physics, because he took us on trips that took us walking up mountains. Like, that was inspiring. Not
and because you're a doer. You're a hands-on worker, right?
Exactly.
Some of us, we're not all the same students, right? So some of us are doers. So for me, I had a history teacher that actually went to Egypt, that like went to these places, had pictures in the lessons of him, like in these places. And so he's talking to me about them. He's storytelling. I'm captivated. I could have repeated everything he said in class. The next class is math. We're reading out of a textbook, you know, like it's not practical applications to anything. No. And I'm the worst student ever. You know, it's literally the difference in style. But I had this teacher saying the same thing, you know, like I didn't test out that smart, yet I'm leading I self-proclaim this, but like leading an industry in e-commerce and Amazon in regards to my team and what we're doing. There's not a lot. There's maybe 200 of us, Andy, as far as like Amazon e-commerce agencies in the world, maybe 200. And way less of those that are actually efficient and, you know, good, you know? And so it's like, to me, just a big mindset thing. I guess I'm saying this to encourage anyone that's out there, that's trailblazing, that's trying a new thing that hasn't been done. The real skill here is problem solving and work ethic. really. You know, you come into a problem, you know, if you can repurpose the skills you learned before, even better, right? Which is, okay, I learned Photoshop, I learned photography. Okay, I you know, for me, it was like fashion, just like, I grew up with sisters, I grew up around the world, like, you know, it was a way of, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like my brand, you know, there's a way of like
expressing yourself,
expressing myself. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. It's a way of expressing myself. Well, if you have good taste in fashion and understand how colors go together and things like that, well, it's not that hard for you to see a bad Amazon listing. I'm making a comparison here and be like, ah, these colors don't go together. And this just doesn't look, feel right. Like there's something else, you know, we need to make this like really jive and like, you know, feel like there's cohesiveness across the brand. And you don't have to be a genius to do that, right? And obviously those skills grow as you get experience under you. But for me, it was some of those talents I had that I thought were just side jobs or hustles or passions or hobbies have really turned into, in e-commerce, you need a whole lot of skills. Like you don't, you know, you need logistics, you need math, you need like, you know, the ability to research, you need to be able to write well, you need like, so either you build a team, you hire an agency like one of ours, or, you know, you need to dabble in all of those things kind of to be successful. I don't know. I just get excited about it.
I think that the typical entrepreneur that certainly I come across in the e-commerce world is, yeah, they've started on their own. They've developed and built a brand. They've done a bit of everything, like what we've just discussed. You know, they've done a bit of everything. And actually, they get to a point where they still want to do everything, but realize, actually, what a piece I don't like. Who can I get rid of these two? And how quickly can I get rid of them to other people? Because you get to a busy Q4. You know, we've just come out of Q4. And you come out of that and all of a sudden you realize that was crazy. I'm not doing that again. You know, there'll be people listening to this that are still picking and packing in their garage, realizing, thinking, I can't do that ever again. Like I spent every waking minute doing that. And then they're like, okay, I need a 3PL. And then there'll be other people that are thinking other things. You know, they'll be like, you know, I didn't quite get my ads drilled in. I need someone to do my ads. Or, you know, actually, how do I expand my brand now? You know, I've had an epic Q4. What do I need to do to take it to the next level? What other products do I need to bring? So many different things. But as entrepreneurs, we want to learn how to do everything, which is amazing. But at the same time, we've got to be able to release some of that and give that to other people. 100%. And also for people that haven't got there yet, the reason you haven't got there is because you haven't taken action yet. Like,
Or you're taking too much action yourself and not delegating or not leading or not managing.
Yeah.
Right. That can be the same case. And, you know, that's something I've been focused on. Something I knew I'm still young. Okay. But like something I knew even when I was a little bit younger was, scaling is the number one reason why businesses fail, cash flow and scaling.
Yeah.
Okay. If those are the issues, those are going to be my primary focus way before I'm trying to scale or have cash flow issues. That has been my focus so that when I get there, I'm not doing what everyone else has an issue with. Just because this is my problem right in front of me doesn't mean I'm not thinking about scale. I'm not thinking about how do I get myself out of this role. Like for me, okay, a reason for us to partner, for example, is like I hate paperwork and the nuances, detailed nuances of like VAT and, you know, getting an NRI with Canada to export, you know, to export goods and some of that stuff that goes into expanding internationally. And, you know, we're talking about expanding your e-commerce business, kind of bringing it back.
Yeah.
That's stuff I hate. Right. So I'm just not good at it. Right. So a move for me, even as a company owning my own agency and my that does the same thing, I might hire an agency that specializes in Amazon Japan or Amazon Europe or, you know, that's their specialty. They help you walk you through all that process and, you know, get someone that understands the market that's great at that's their thing, that's their jam, and partner with them to get it done. And something about being a good leader is understanding what you're great at, what you're not, and, you know, plugging those holes. And in some ways, I wish I wish my team could do this so I don't have to pay this outsourced firm. Well, they can't at this point, you know, so you got to do what you got to do. I want to bring this. Okay. I want to get into the details. I know you have a process for, you know, expanding brands, you know, taking them to the next level. I want to get into that step process and make sure we give it enough time. Before we do, I want to give one more shout out to today's sponsor for our episode of Startup Hustle. Today's episode is supported by Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat discussing tech topics, big, small, and strange. Like I said, I checked out all of their episodes. One of the last ones was How Are Tech Hubs Changing, today? And they talked everything about from gentrification to, taking cities that aren't on the map and putting them on the map to bringing in talent to cities that weren't there before. You can learn more about Compiler at redhat.com or clicking the link in our show notes. I'll have a link to the sponsor as well as to everything Andy here as we're wrapping up. Okay, so to the next stage of this, because I could just keep talking about mindset and how you get good at this or e-commerce, because it's something that, when I got started in this space, there wasn't even YouTube videos. Sure, there was YouTube videos to look at Photoshop or some of those things.
Yeah.
But there wasn't YouTube around Amazon, really. It was wholesale. It was arbitrage.
Yes.
It wasn't things like brand registry or map pricing or reseller agreements or international expansion. No one was doing anything like that. So it really was not looking to the past or history to show me what to do here, but really just trying to figure it out myself, and that's why I think we bring so much value is the ability to do that. Let's talk about your process there at Global E-commerce Experts. What does that look like to take a brand internationally or to expand? Like if a brand comes to you, let's say they're already launched in the US, or let's say they're already launched in the US, or wherever they are in the world, they're launched there. They're saying, Andy, we're doing a decent job here. We don't know what we don't know. We're doing a decent job. We feel like the next opportunity for us, from everything we're reading, whatever, is to go to Canada, Europe, Japan, Australia. We don't know exactly what should be next. What should we expect as a brand or a seller to need to jump through? What hurdles should we need to jump through? What should we prepare for to expand?
Yeah, I think, we've over the years, we've expanded thousands of brands now. So what we've looked at is we've refined this actually. This was a 6-step process last year. Unfortunately, okay, we've made it a 7-step process, but that's life, isn't it? But we've over the years, we refine it because it's an ever evolving process, because what happens is regulations change and the market changes. And coming back to what you were saying about YouTube videos, in the early days, we're all trailblazing this because this is new. We were learning this. We were going finding out all this information and basically making it. Because how we started was, we were doing VAT and we started with warehousing, really helping clients. And people coming to us saying, we got this problem. Being the entrepreneur I am, I'm like, well, I think we can solve that for you because I know so-and-so and I know so-and-so. And before you know it, you've done that so much that you've identified what those crucial steps are. And
that everyone has to go through.
And of course, now what's happening is people are coming to us and saying, well, how do I expand? And we're like, well, here's the steps. Because if you want to successfully expand your brand, there's a number of different ways you can go. And this 7-step formula really could be used if you're going to Europe, to Japan, to Australia, okay, to Canada. So what I'm going to do is give the sort of 7 steps, if you like. Now, we really focus in and hone in on Europe at the moment.
Okay, so real quick, just because not all of our listeners are Amazon, focused listeners, they're from all over. You mentioned VAT and warehousing. I'm not sure that our listeners know what VAT is. So can we just break that down real quick?
Of course we can. So when you are expanding to a new market, there's lots of different things you need to consider. You need to make sure your product's compliant and your business is compliant. So if you take the business side of things, you've got to make sure you've got VAT's value-added tax. So okay, sales tax to Nexus. Think Nexus if you're listening from the States. Think Nexus instead of, all the different stakes you've got. Think of VAT in all the different countries there are.
Okay.
So it's exactly the same headache with Nexus as to VAT. It's just a slightly different way of looking at it. And that's what VAT is. Then you've got things like product compliance. So there's a whole host of different things, and in different places it's not VAT, it's GST. There's just slightly different wording depending on where you are in the world. But the things to focus is on is not necessarily those little bits. It's where you're going in those markets, and then thinking, okay, I need to get my business compliant. How do I pay my taxes and my dues, for the want of a better word? So that's really what we got to. And we looked at this from, you know, what all of these sellers have done, because, you know, there's so many hurdles. And what we're really focused on is, you know, what I'm going to give you today, you know, we could sell you everything we're going to do. But the reality is everything is out there. It's on. We've done YouTube videos. We've done podcasts. We've done webinars. We have literally told everyone how to do this. If you want to do, and coming back to what we were talking about earlier, there's different ways of doing things, isn't there? You know, in the early days, you're learning how to do it. You're going to a YouTube video. You learn how to do it. And then you go and work it out to do it yourself because you haven't got the cash to do it, but you got the time.
Yep.
You go through a whole load of reiterations and you get to the point where actually I've now got the cash, but I don't have the time. So, dude, you know what you're doing. Here's the cash. You do it for me. And obviously there's a myriad of options all the way in there. And that comes completely back to the mindset where, you know, I think 10 years ago, I never would have paid anyone anything because I'd have been like, I can do this myself.
100%. That's a flaw. Right. And so it's that thinking of what got me here is not what I need to get me there. I think of that all the time because I'm a doer. I love to work. I've pulled all night. Like I'm in year seven. You know, I pulled all nighters last year, a lot of them, maybe a dozen. Right. When it came down to it, I was in the zone or I had the project that had to be done. I still love to work. I work alongside my people because I enjoy it. Like that's my leadership style. And what I will also say is like, I've paid for coaching. I'm paying consultants now to help me process out my business. You know, I've paid, speaking coaches, sales copywriting coaches. I would have never done that. Never. Mm-hmm. If I didn't believe myself to be an expert in something. Now I see value in what I do and I am an expert and I'm worth paying because I'm going to save you a lot of trouble. And now, because I can see that in myself, I can see that in others. Does that make sense? Like, right.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this guy could be an expert that can teach me a lot of things and can save me time. And why do I think that? Because I value what I do myself.
Quick question for you. 10 years ago, would you have paid someone £1,000 to do a course if you believed that would have got you, as opposed to now?
No, I wouldn't have. One, I didn't have the $1,000.
Yep.
Okay. And something I did, one option we didn't mention there was you're either doing it yourself or you're paying someone. I was more like a little African in that way, in that I traded. I was always trading.
I'm with you.
I'll do photo. You do photos for me because I need content. I didn't have a photographer in house. Like, you do photos or video for me. I'll give you office space.
Yes.
I'll let you, you know, have the company van. I'll, like, you know, you need it for this event or like things like that.
Yeah, content. Because loads of them. Yeah,
I didn't have the money, right? So it was just like, what can I do for you as I'm getting some skills that we can trade and barter? You know, that was a big one, a huge one for me that got me here as a bootstrapper. I'm a bootstrapper.
Exactly the same here. You know, that ability to build the business with your own cash, with profits from the business, always being profitable, is absolutely critical to the growth. And that scaling bit you're coming back, we were talking about, you know, you as you scale and grow, people talk about growth pains, right? And you're like, no, I won't ever have those. No. And you're like, I know they're coming at some point, but when are they coming? And all of a sudden, you're like,
the pandemic hits.
That's the one.
You know, the pandemic hits, sped maybe e-commerce up 5 years, you know, six years, I think. Not that we weren't growing as we grow, but it sped everything up. Right.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
You know, think of Italian brands. I think of you, like, I work with some Italian brands. Yep. I think of them. They were shut down forever. What are they, you know, doing with their product? How are they keeping people employed? Where, you know, cool. They should be expanding at that time. They should have been selling to some of the markets that were open, you know, and that was a lifeline. And so more and more companies coming online because of something that happened worldwide. We're talking about e-commerce expanding, right?
Yeah.
And expansion. And that's what I'm talking about worldwide here. I would have never thought, I'm in Kansas City, Missouri, in the middle of the US. Okay. For people that haven't been here, you know, we have a lot of pride here. We're like a Midwestern Silicon Valley. A lot of great people have come out of here, but most people think of it as like a cow town. It was an old cow town. It was famous for, like, you know, moving cattle across the US. And, that's just kind of our reputation. And yet there's people on the other side of the world that need what we do so bad that they're contacting some small startup in Kansas City, Missouri, to help them, you know, expand internationally.
I love that.
And to me, that just gets me off, right? It's just like, I'm literally getting contacted from Europe. I had a call with a guy from Nigeria this week that was just like, you know, wow, I'm talking to a guy in Nigeria right now that found me. That's crazy to me. You know, but all right, I don't want to get derailed because I really want to provide some value. We were talking about the steps and I took us off a little tangent.
That was my fault probably as well. We're getting too excited here, aren't we?
Well, I'm passionate about it. That's what, you know, you can't build in it. You can't create an industry or lead an industry or trailblaze without passion. If you don't have passion, you're in the wrong business, you know? So, all right.
Okay. Right. So let's get into this. So look, there's seven clear steps, to make your expansion as easy as possible. And I'll go through them step by step, give you a bit of content around them. You know, I could talk about all of them for days. So I'm gonna go high level. Perhaps if you pick out a few bits, if I start talking some lingo that people might not know, then pick that out, fire it at me, and then go from there. How's that sound?
Sounds perfect.
Wicked.
Shoot.
So the first thing is market research. I mean, I know this sounds really simple and really easy, but what sells in one country may not sell in another. And you need to look at, when you start looking at Europe specifically, you know, there's different parts of Europe, there's different products that sell well. You know, the UK doesn't have a snow season. There's not really any snow in the UK. There's a lot of people that go skiing, but selling car tires with, you know, tracks on them or stuff on them to stop them, they won't sell in the UK. And I'm using as an example, right? You know, but actually in other parts of Europe, Italy, we were just talking about, in the Alps, in France, you know, actually they would sell really, really well. They're not going to sell in Greece, you know? So there's different parts of Europe, depending on the product you sell, is going to depend on what's going to work really, really well. So the first thing is to identify if your product's already being sold or something similar. If it's not being sold, is there a market for that product? The reality is there probably is, because I know all the products I see new products coming through every single day that I've never thought of or never seen. And I'm like, that's going to be awesome. The downside to my job is that I see new products coming through every day, and I've got a house full of Amazon products from our clients that I buy because I just think they're awesome. And I say Amazon, it could be Shopify, eBay, or anywhere else. You know, it's just one of those things. So understanding the market is really, really important. And
One note there, because I was glad you said if there's not something there or similar, it doesn't mean it's a no.
Yeah.
Right? I personally, as someone who's been in this a long time, I've launched plenty of products, even in the US, the first marketplace, that there was no one before us. Chicago, I was the first to sell steaks on dry ice and ship food products way before Whole Foods, way before people were selling food on Amazon.
Yeah.
We figured it out with some handling time, and, you know, we got really inventive with that. We weren't using the FBA model, and yet, you know, selling high-end steaks. Another one was men's formal suspenders, $100 plus a pair. The closest thing was $9.99 or something like that at the time.
Yeah.
We're 10 times that amount. Can it sell? I don't know. Let's take a chance. We see a demand for suspenders. Well, you know, so some of these things, like, just because the market doesn't have it, a lot of these emerging marketplaces are brand new.
Yep.
That's more of a risk. And the other thing is, like, you know, so maybe the UK doesn't really have snow. Australia has been an awesome market for us because we have flip-flop seasons.
Yes.
And so a lot of my brands that have seasonality issues, maybe not issues, but a seasonality type of brand in the US, we take them to Australia. They're now selling in their slow season in the US. They're selling better in Australia because of the flip-flop, and giving them more balance in their business. So awesome. Okay. I just wanted to add those two notes because I think that's huge market research.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And then the last part of that market research is product sourcing. Now, I think the key thing to say here is you don't change your sourcing method straight away. But is there opportunity to source your products somewhere else? And what I mean by that is the cost of a container being $15,000 to $20,000, at some point you're going to need to consider, is there another option? Can you source those products and be made in Europe? You know, could they be made in a different part of the world? I mean, I know we're all talking about this right now because it's a massive piece. So one of the reasons we set up a shipping company was to help our clients reduce costs, and we'll come on to shipping shortly. But, you know, the product sourcing, we took a shipping company on to build out shipping, but now I'm telling people to source their products in Europe because they ain't going to win otherwise.
Things change.
You've got to adapt. And, you know, is there somewhere where, you know, we've taken on some clients recently who didn't launch until they'd found somewhere to source and make their products in Europe. And at that point, I was like, this is where we got to start going. So that's the market research piece. You know, make sure your product can be sold, do some research, make sure you're going to make some cash, and see if there's a sourcing option that's available to you. Don't change initially. And especially at the moment with COVID, you know, can you travel? Can you not travel? You're better off sticking with what you know until you've got a real understanding. Yeah, there's no point.
Maybe having a little bit of less margins or whatever, but having a product with less margins, but having it in stock and being able to sell it and keep your customers is more important than being out of stock for 4 months because logistically you couldn't get product or you're at the bottom of the totem pole as a new brand and, you know, push to the bottom of the queue. So great advice. Latin America being one of the big ones we're talking about for, you know, a lot of US sellers, like where can we go besides China? Latin America really popping up big right now. Because, you know, obviously we don't have to ship by boat.
No.
It can be trained up or trucked up.
Yep.
So added cost, but better than not selling at all. Great stuff.
I totally agree with that. And I think the key thing is before we go too much further is that, you know, the thought of expanding your business, a lot of people think it's just too difficult. I'm going to need people for this and people for that. You know, the reality is you don't need all that. And we'll come on to that at the end. But, you know, for people listening thinking, I've talked about it. Someone said it didn't work. It did work. I know some people doing some epic stuff. It seems like a lot of work. You know, nothing that's good is easy. But it's about making it as easy as you possibly can for you.
Being able to pivot, setting yourself up to be able to pivot, thinking long game, thinking, okay, if this doesn't happen and FBA limits my stock, do I have FBM set up? Am I going to be able to, you know, source products? Am I going to be able to continue to ship for customers? Think about the customer first. It is that pivot and having options. If a lot of brands, like I have a brand right now, Canada is our number one, is our best marketplace. We launched in the US. Canada's, we have 5 number one bestsellers. We wouldn't have known that if we hadn't expanded. That's what's really kept our business going in that brand. Yep. And we actually went to the UK and pulled out. This was like years ago.
Yeah.
Because the UK went through all these changes. You had to be warehousing to sell in the UK. Now you don't. You can just do FBA. All these things change.
Yep.
Canada won, UK failed. You know, how do we see it?
Yeah. It's exactly that. And as you say, you know, the markets are changing all the time. You know, the attitudes are changing, the perceptions are changing, the regulations are changing. And what works one day might not work the next day and vice versa. It's so adaptable. And you've got to adapt with it. So market Moving research along. Is that first piece. The second piece is compliance. And we touched on it briefly a minute ago. You know, the compliance piece is about getting your business and your product compliant with that region. So in Europe, we talked about VAT. You've got to make sure your business is registered for VAT where you want to sell the product broadly. There's a whole load of if nots, if what's, maybes, you know, one-stop shops, a whole load of words that I could confuse everybody with. But the reality is you need to get your business VAT registered in the countries you're fulfilling from to start with. Okay. And what you need to do is you need to do that in the UK and in Europe. And our traditional approach right now is you register in the UK, Netherlands, and Germany. They're the three that you register off in straight away. And that's the best options depending on your strategy. And there's lots of different strategies. So that's the business compliance side. There's a couple of other sides to that. So your product, if you're selling your product in the US, I can almost guarantee that your product will, not your product necessarily, but your label will need to be adapted because the regulations here in the UK are different to those in the States. Therefore, your product might still be compliant, but the packaging is worded slightly different. So you might
example here, example here for our US customers that like maybe not understand this, you know, US is becoming more and more and more Spanish, like as a second language. Spanish dominates the US as our second language. And soon it might be the primary language, honestly. Just Latin America, you know, is becoming more and more prominent in Spanish speaking people. But Canada, for example, has a French aspect to it. And, you know, there's certain categories of product that if you don't have your label also in French, you know, ingredients, like think foods, things, pet supplements, things that go in your body. You know, if your label is not in French, you can't sell there as well. And that can be a cost. That can be, you know, planning, maybe relabeling, rebottling, splitting your shipments, sourcing from a different place so you don't have to relabel. You know, we could talk about it all day, but like you said, it depends on where your strategy is.
Yep.
But those are the things you got to kind of think of.
And what I'd say is, yeah, we've done a whole load of podcasts, webinars, YouTube videos, like everything you can think of. All of these little subjects, you can go and grab more detail. And I will give you a link at the end. You can go and grab all that information to make that easy. But
or just call you and hire you. But
I would just talk to one of our experts. You don't even have to hire us. Well, our success managers will probably speak to you for hours and hours on end because they're just so passionate about it. And then you want to use us to use us type approach. But so you've got to get the business compliant and you've got to get the product compliant. And there's a whole load of things you need in there. But one last thing in the compliance piece for a lot of brands we see right now is also getting your product trademarked, making sure that you've got that brand with a trademark so that you can't get infringed on it. The brands we see winning right now are brands that have got a trademark. There's no copyright issues. There's no infringements, or there is, but they can shut them down quickly. And the brands that aren't doing that are finding that more difficult. So it's compliance, but it's not. It's
brand protection. It's control. As an Amazon experts at this point, Marknology, whether you might not have a trademark, but there has to be plans for a trademark for us to want to even engage. We need all those extra tools that come with something called brand registry, which is what you get on Amazon. It's not just for protecting your product from being copied or, those types of things. It's also access to these tools on Amazon, whether it's marketing tools, advertising tools, creative storytelling tools that you only get if you prove that you're a brand. On the platform. And that's something that Marknology goes hard on. It's a must.
Yep.
Okay. Totally. We have like 3 more minutes before we're past that time. So we need to hit the next few points, a minute each. Let's crush them out.
Let me crack these through then. So the next one, marketplace launch. So it's about launching on which marketplace, how you do it and where you do it, and how you ship the product to it. Depending on how you're doing your logistics, or depending on how you do that, where you ship it from. So choosing the right marketplace strategy for you is the critical next step. How do you work out what's the best marketplace, when and where? So that's the next thing. Obviously, translations come into that, payment providers, stuff like that. The next thing.
Let me add one note there. Cool. So like Brazil, different barrier to entry. It's about getting approval. There's one shipper. There's not all these options. It's like, okay, Brazil. A lot of our sellers, depending on their budgets, so translation and redoing graphics and videos and everything to be translated has a cost, right? So a lot of times we're saying, hey, let's launch in the UK before Germany and the Netherlands and Italy, because those we need to translate.
Yeah,
English, right? So like lowest barrier to entry, Canada, UK, Australia, the English markets first before we start tackling foreign language, right? So that's some of the thinking.
Yep, totally agree. Because that keeps it really, really simple. So the next thing is 3PL, third-party logistics, warehousing. If you're based overseas, you get a return. You're going to need to do a removal order in some way, form or another. You're going to need to bring stuff into a warehouse at some point. Where is that warehouse? You're coming back to the fulfilled by merchant. Here in the UK and in Europe, you want seller fulfilled prime. If Amazon shuts FBA again, like it did during COVID, you can turn on Prime straight away in your warehouse. Yep. We actually say, when we're doing a setup, get Prime, get seller fulfilled Prime, even if you put stuff back into FBA so that you've always got it and you've still got that trickling over where you need it. So, a warehouse is a natural thing, especially if you're based overseas, because you haven't got anywhere to get the removal orders, the returns for. But obviously, your strategy is much easier if you've got a 3PL, because, in order to be successful, you might be on Amazon, you might be on eBay, you might have your own website, you might be on OnBuy, Frugo, Otto, Bol, Real, Allegro, and all the others that come with that in order to be successful. And you can do that by one piece of software. It doesn't have to be difficult. The next thing is promoting your product. How do you promote your product? What are you doing to get that strategy to push the products out into the world so that they can actually sell? Don't think you're going to be able to come here, put your stock on Amazon, and it's just going to sell. It's not going to happen unless you're incredibly, incredibly lucky and gifted. The reality is you're going to have to put some bucks, pounds, euros behind it to make that absolutely fly. And then there's two last things. In order to be successful, you're probably going to need a website at some point, and you're probably going to need a strategy to build out off marketplace. We hear a lot about it now. It's absolutely key in Europe as well. It's about having a strategy to come off of marketplaces, Amazon, eBay, wherever that might be, to make sure that your brand is seen as a brand, not, you know, a Chinese import brand on Amazon.
Yeah. Right? So something we're doing with a well-established brand, I'm not going to name them here. They actually own five or six brands, or a company of brands. You know, they have a website that we're touching. Marknology focuses on Amazon, but we do a little of everything. And what we're creating in those countries is simply landing pages that are translated. So we're not creating brand new websites, but we have dedicated pages, whether they're coming from Germany or Italy or France or Spain or the Netherlands, yep, or Sweden or the UK. Those are all the ones in Europe, I think, that are available. They're going to come and they're going to feel comfortable because trust matters, right? Yep. And so they're going to feel comfortable. They're going to read it in their native language. Maybe they're still checking out on Amazon, perhaps. That might be phases. What I can say is, in this stage, let's say you have brand registry and a trademark internationally, that's great. That can get you to the next stage. The websites can be next, but it's really thinking about what's ahead anyway, right? Like, okay, yeah, I want to think about what happens if a pandemic happens. Well, all the brands that had an FBM backup option when we went through that crushed it.
Yep.
Right? So thinking ahead, what are we going to need down the line? Great stuff, yeah, Andy.
And then the last piece really is really simple. It's the growth phase. How are you actually going to scale that? You've got all these little bits going on. You've got everything in place. How do you scale that? How do you get your products into retail? What other marketplaces are you really stretching to? What other countries can you get to, you know, within the region? So if you're in Europe, what are you doing in Poland, Greece, you know, Spain, Italy? You know, where else are you reaching that all these massive opportunities are? And retail is a big one. You know, how can you get your products into a actual store? Because it's great selling online, and e-commerce is definitely the way forward. But actually,
is that number seven? Is that number seven?
It's a growth is number seven, and okay, retail is part of that. And obviously, part of that is exit strategy. What is your exit strategy for that brand? Obviously, there's a huge amount going on with aggregators right now. You know, how long that will stay for, no one knows. You know, clearly that's going to take on some, you know, take on to the next level this year, you know, aggregators buying aggregators, you know, it's coming. Like, there's no doubt about that. So, you know, but the longevity of all of that, what does that look like? What's next? You know, if you've got an eBay store, you've got a Shopify store, how long before the aggregators move into those markets? Yeah, they're already doing it, but what do you need to do to set yourself up for that? You know, you've also got to leave some stuff on the table for these guys. You know, we're working with a lot of aggregators that have got hundreds of brands that aren't in Europe. And we're like, well, we can just expand them. And because we do everything we've just said under one roof. So, you know, when you expand, you'd only need the current agency you're working with, like you guys, and us. You know, we can do everything. But obviously, if they're already working with you, you're already working with people you trust. Don't move away from that. You know, just use us as the next stage in that and put everything under that one barrier, because you go, right, Andy, I need to expand to Europe. What do I need to do? Our guys will just go this, 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 and this. And you can then go, wicked, how much is it going to cost me? This, done. Okay, let's crack on. And we can expand brands in 14 days.
Oh, so, that's crazy.
You know, people can't get stock in 14 days. Mm. You know, it's, you know, but what I would say to brands right now is, you've just come out of Q4. If you've got stock sat in the warehouse that you haven't been able to sell, and you're thinking, what do I need to do with this? Right? The number one option is, instead of sitting in Q1 thinking, I'm not going to get rid of this in Q1 and it's probably still going to be there in Q2, is, what do I need to do to evolve this and adapt this and put this into a new market? If you've got stock there sat there today, I can get that selling in Europe in 14 days, because we can do everything under one roof. You just talk to one person and we sort it. Like, it doesn't get any easier than that.
And okay, we have to sign off. I think we should leave it there.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any easier than that. 14 days, honestly, is an amazing timeline. As someone that's done it myself, that's crazy. I agree. Honestly, Andy, there's not one thing I would have countered that you said today. So if I can validate kind of just everything you guys heard today, it's like, boom, hit it on the money, from growth to market projections. I really want to keep this under an hour so anyone listening on their commute can get it in. Well, I'm going to have you back for a part two. I think it's a must. We got more to talk about. I think we could dig into those 7 points and make another hour of content that would be extremely valuable.
Easy.
Andy, we're going to link soon, whether it's in person or I'm in Europe or it's at a conference. You know, we're both part of the Ecom Cooperative, which I think is how we met. And I love being a part of that. So if I don't see you soon, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, getting to pick your brain. I'm going to have all of Andy's contact information in the show notes. You'll be able to find it for anyone listening. If you guys want to get in contact or contact me, if you've already got my contact, I'll connect you. Absolute pleasure.
Fantastic. Thanks very much for having us on. It's been amazing to speak to you again. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. I know it's late there. Really appreciate you staying up late for the show. And once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle is supported by Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat discussing tech topics big, small, and strange. Listen to Compiler on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'll also include a link in the show notes, like I mentioned. Many thanks to Compiler and Red Hat for supporting Startup Hustle. I'll see you next time, guys. Signing off.
Cheers. Thank you.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it like we do it.